Morning, everyone. When I saw the title for this morning's talk, I must admit, I thought, oh, that's going to be a tough one. Because I think that word submission is not easy, perhaps, today. Not an attractive word, perhaps not a very popular word. It can give an image of being weak, subservient, downtrodden, a bit of a doormat. Maybe the kind of person who comes to mind might be somebody like Baldrick, who, wherever we meet him, for those of you who are Blackadder fans, in whatever age he is, he's always at the bottom of the pecking order, living a bit of a miserable life as a result. So is that what Peter's saying? Is he saying, you know, if you're a Christian, expect to be kicked around, just take it, put up with it, let people be horrible to you, turn the other cheek. Is that what he's saying? Well, no, I don't think he is. You might be glad to hear. And so we're going to take a quick canter through this passage and try and draw out perhaps what Peter is saying in this context and what it means for us. So what does submission mean if it doesn't mean being a weak, downtrodden doormat? Well, this picture is actually quite appropriate because the Greek word that Peter uses is a military term that literally means that you rank underneath somebody, just as Private Baldrick there ranks below Captain Blackadder. And so there is definitely an idea that we should be willing to accept the authority of others in our life. And I suppose you could say at its simplest, it means that we shouldn't always be expecting to be top dog. Fair enough. But does it mean more than that? Well, it does, because two groups specifically are mentioned by Peter in this passage who we should be submitting ourselves to, or at least the Christians of that time, he said, should be submitting themselves to. So who are they? Well, first of all, there's a group who I'm going to call the state. And we see in verses 13 to 17 that Peter is saying that for the Lord's sake, you should be submitting to the emperor and two governors. So I'm going to sum that up as the state. And the secondly, who else should they be submitting to? Well, I'm going to call it the home. So it's relationships within the home. And I think we could broaden that out to relationships generally. And we certainly see that picture in other verses in the Bible. And we see that in verses 18 to 21. And Peter says that we should be doing this, or the Christians of the time should be doing that, for the sake of God, because God has put those authorities in place. He has set up this social structure whereby we have governments, we live within states, we live within homes and social relationships. And even though, of course, this was not a Christian state at the time, and many of the laws and expectations would have not sat easily, nevertheless, Peter says, you should respect those institutions. And isn't this relevant at the present for us when so many people are not respecting the state, are disillusioned and distrustful of authorities and governments? Isn't it important that we should be praying for our government, praying for the world authorities, and what they are doing? The home situation is very much within the cultural norms at the time, where it's saying that if you're a slave, you should be accepting the head of the household as having authority over you. And they specifically mention masters, but of course that could have been a mistress as well. That's perhaps a little bit less easy for us to understand as we don't live in that kind of cultural norm. But nonetheless, there is this sense that God has set up particular cultural and social structures. And this tells us that ultimately we're doing this because, as Debbie said in our time of worship, we are actually submitting to God, submitting to a situation that he has set up. But if we look carefully, there's another reason. And that is that actually God wants us to live good lives that honour him. And we see that again and again through this passage. We saw it last week in verse 12. Live such good lives that they may see your good deeds and glorify God. And that's the ultimate purpose. We're living lives here that glorify God. And that will include obeying the law, being good citizens, and trying to have good relationships within our families. Ultimately, God wants us to live lives like Christ, who after all said, "Give to Caesar what is Caesar's." And there's yet another point here. Peter's saying, don't give the church a bad name unnecessarily. There's an element perhaps of, you know, we are living in tough times. Keep your head down where you can to survive. And we have to remember this was written at a time when Christians were refusing to honour the gods. And that meant they were suspected of potentially bringing down the displeasure of the gods on their communities, which is not a popular thing to do. They were seen as antisocial at best, irreligious, and politically disloyal at the worst. And it was really interesting hearing Kay remind us of Open Doors this morning. There must be so many Christians in the world who can absolutely understand that, having to keep your head down, not drawing attention to yourself, being careful who you meet with, who you speak to, but nonetheless submitting to God and honouring God by obeying his law in a very difficult situation. So that shows us that this does apply to us, even though we live in a very different world where slavery is at least illegal, although as we know, sadly, it does continue. He wishes us to live good lives that reflect on him. And verse 16 says, live as free people, as servants of God. We are all ultimately servants of God, regardless of our place in the social structures that we have today. But does that mean we always follow the law? Do we always obey authority? What about when a state or authority is evil or imposes unjust laws, mistreats its citizens? Is there a line that the state should not cross and that therefore we should not cross? And I think I've already given a hint of that when I talk about Christians in persecution having to submit first to God and ignore the law of the land that tells them it's illegal to follow God, to follow Christ. The justification for this comes in verse 14. Peter says, the emperor and governors are sent by God to punish those who do wrong and to commend those who do right. In other words, he's saying that the state is here with a remit. They are put there by God to do good, to administer justice for the good of the people. And when they cross that line, that does give some justification sometimes for defying what they say. Some examples of where this happens in the Bible. In Exodus chapter 1, the Hebrew midwives are told by Pharaoh to kill all the baby boys that are born in Egypt to Hebrew women. And they disobey. They decide this is the line they're not going to cross. And they're very, very clever. They tell Pharaoh that the Hebrew women give birth so quickly, the baby's already arrived by the time they get there. So they disobey. Daniel is full of examples of God's people in Babylon refusing to obey certain laws. Daniel refusing to bow down and worship the king as God. His friends Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego refusing to honour the Babylonian gods and being thrown into a lion's den as a result. What about Peter himself? Here he is urging them to submit to the authorities and honour the emperor. If we look in Acts chapter 5, Peter himself disobeyed the Jewish authorities. they told him they had to stop preaching about Jesus. And his answer was, in Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men. So Peter's saying, there is a line that we don't cross. And ultimately we submit first to God and then to men, where it's appropriate and in line with his word. So in each of these cases, it's not about defiance to government for the sake of it, because they feel like it, because they don't quite like the government that's got elected that year. It's about submission to God. It's about the Hebrew midwives recognizing the need to protect life. It's about Daniel refusing to worship another god. It's about Peter recognizing God's command to tell the world about Jesus. It's about submitting to that higher authority first. A modern day example, or a more modern day example, in Nazi Germany, as the Nazis came to power, the church was very unclear how to respond. And sadly, many of them did go along. Many Christians and many churches went along with the laws and culture that the Nazi state brought into being. And a famous example, who many of you will know, who resisted and said, no, this is wrong. This is a line that's being crossed. We cannot go there. Was Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who said this, silence in the face of evil is itself evil. And he stood up against that and said, this is wrong. And he did, as many persecuted Christians do today. He paid the ultimate price. And of course, Jesus himself paid the ultimate price when he submitted to God's will for himself. So I think this shows us that submission is not about being a doormat. It is not about being subservient. It's not about just taking whatever happens to us and accepting it. And it can mean something really positive. It can mean taking power and control. I wanted to find a picture of Baldric when he was made Lord and he takes power. And I couldn't find a good picture of it, so I've fallen back on Queen Elizabeth here. Taking power and control. Because there's something very interesting in this passage. When Peter writes to the masters and talks about how they should run their houses, he's not actually writing to the masters at all, he's writing to the slaves. And that's really unusual. In the ancient world, there were many, many writers who would write about what it is to run a good household, how you should run a good state, how you should conduct yourself. And these were called household codes. But they were always directed to the people in power. They were always written to the head of the household, who would be a man. They were never written to the underdogs. So Peter's doing something really radical here. He's writing to the underdogs. He's writing to the people who don't appear to have power, whether those are slaves in the household or his Christian brothers and sisters who are living in an unbelieving world with very little cultural power. So what's Peter telling them? Well, first of all, he's telling them, you matter to God. You have value to God. Live as free people, the free people that God has made you. Even if you are enslaved, you have value to God. He's telling them, you have the power of choice. You can choose how you respond. You can respond with anger or hostility or hatred or resentment. Or you can choose to live like servants of God. You have the power to choose. He's telling them that they have the opportunity to influence others. Live such good lives that they may see your good deeds. They may glorify God, that you will silence the ignorant talk of foolish men. You have the opportunity to influence, even in a seemingly powerless position. And Peter says, you do this through the example and the hope that Christ gives you, who also submitted to God in difficult times and won through and won the victory. So, like those Christians, we live in a largely unbelieving world, but we have those same responsibilities to submit where it's appropriate. same opportunities to do good and live as servants of God. And I want to just take a moment to think, what does that mean for you and for me? We're not slaves, and we're not persecuted. But maybe there's a situation where you need to submit to God. Maybe you work somewhere where there's a challenging culture where you need to speak out. You know, we've seen some whistleblowers in the USA recently, haven't we? Now, I've no idea whether they did it from faith, but they saw something they believed was wrong and challenged it. A friend of mine, a Christian friend, went for an interview with a company, and they were telling him, oh, we're amazing here. We all work so hard. None of us go home before 8 o'clock in the evening. We're always here in the morning, and we work at weekends, and we work in the evenings, and it's company first. And my friend said to them, what's your view on the work-life balance? He didn't get the job. But he really felt this is an unhealthy culture that is abusing people, and he spoke out. So maybe there's something at your work or your school or your college where you need to speak out. What about your relationships? Do you need to act with grace to somebody who's not treating you very well, even though you want to hit out and fight back? Or maybe you need to challenge a situation where you can see someone else is being abused or bullied or is in an unhealthy, unhelpful relationship. Say it again. Like those Christians, we're in a largely unbelieving world, but we have those same responsibilities to submit where appropriate, the same opportunities to do good and to live as servants of God.